Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Dialogue Out Loud series. I'm Taylor Petrie, editor of Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought. Today, we're excited to have with us David Eddington, an emeritus professor of linguistics at Brigham Young University. In his fascinating article, Utah Naming Practices, 1960 to 2020, he provides a statistical analysis to get at the age-old question about whether or not Utah has any distinctive practices for giving baby names, and as a somewhat of a proxy for naming practices of Latter-day Saints. David, welcome. It's so nice to talk to you about your work.
Great to be here, Taylor.
So let's set the scene. The idea that Utah has some unique baby names, both in the name itself as well as creative spellings, goes back a long way as a kind of rumor, as a funny quirk about the state. Can you tell us a little bit about older stereotypes of names, as well as more recent developments in terms of websites dedicated to the Utah baby name craze?
Yeah, there have been some great websites, the Utah Baby Namer and the New Utah Baby Namer have been nice websites to go to. But, you know, you go back to the old Utah names, you know, Lavelle, Lane, LaRue, the La names were really popular. Not anymore, though. They kind of died out with my parents' generation. But there are new ones. But the question I always have when I look at this stuff is it really true, right? You could always find somebody with an odd name that's from Utah, and you say, see, it's a common thing in Utah, or this is a Utah name. So it's nice to get some actual data to work with.
My grandmother was named Ladella, and definitely a part of that like faux French phase of Utah baby names. And I remember even as a young child, it sort of being a joke that this was, that there was something funny about the way that that Utahns named their children. And then I sort of felt like Utahns had assimilated, and we didn't do that anymore. Maybe we didn't do the faux French names anymore. But it turns out there was a sort of persistence of the idea that Utahns named their babies in different ways. And as you mentioned, you wanted to get beyond the anecdotes and the jokes to really dive into the data on this question. So tell us a little bit about your methodology, how you compiled and analyzed the data for looking at this question.
Yeah, the nice thing is that this Social Security system keeps track of all the baby names every year. And so it's nice. Anyone can go in there and download it. So that was my point of departure, to go there and find all the U.S. names and the Utah names, and then kind of get a subset of Utah names that were more common in the state than in the rest of the U.S., and then analyze those.
So your study really kind of explores two things, as I understand it, sort of distinctive Utah names, as well as the question of whether Utah is ahead, and that includes spellings, I guess, as well as the question of whether or not Utah is ahead of trends on picking names and that eventually become popular. So let's start with the second one. You noticed that Utah had the names in Utah had become more popular there first before taking off in the rest of the United States. Can you give some examples of that or what the research showed there?
Yeah, well, I found 337 names that became popular in Utah before they became popular in the U.S. more generally. And I have to say, well, if I were doing this with names from people from Indiana, would I find a few hundred also? So it's hard to know if that's special to Utah, but I did find 337. The most interesting one, I think, is Brittany. Brittany came out as being very common in Utah way before Britney Spears ever got popular. And then when it started to catch the rest of the U.S., it kind of died out in Utah. But I found about 337 names that started out that way. Kind of interesting.
So, and along those lines, lots of different subspellings of Brittany as well. So it's not just
tons of them, but
the variety of different spellings as well, right?
Yes, and Utahns really like to give unusual spellings to more common names. For example, a Jackson, J-A-X-O-N, right? That's one of the common things that you'll find in Utah, is that's spelled with an X, where it's usually spelled with a J-K or a C-K-X. Or lots of changing, for example, a name like Jason, J-A-S-O-N, putting an extra Y, J-A-Y-S-O-N, putting Z's in for S's. So something like Isabel with a Z instead of an S, pretty common thing to do in Utah. So, yeah.
So people like this is so fascinating, and I'm wondering, just to kind of cross these two points, did you find any examples of distinctive Utah spellings of common names that kind of ended up taking off in other places as well? So you know, maybe we are ahead of the time on Brittany and some other names, but what about like distinctive Utah spellings of names? Did those end up kind of getting exported too?
Yes, they did, but I'd have to look at my list to see which ones. I don't remember right offhand, but there were some, yes.
Jackson might be one example, I think, potentially, yeah. There, where it goes from CK.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if that's one that's taken off outside of the state.
Yeah. Interesting. So let's get into some of these other examples here. What are some of the other distinctive features of names that you were looking for, and what did you find? So you mentioned substituting X's for CK's, Z's for S's. What are some other distinctive Utah naming practices that showed up?
Well, what I did is I took the names that I had, I made two lists. Names that were common in Utah and not that common outside the U.S., and then compared that to Utah names. I used some computer algorithms to do this. And one thing I found out was names, especially for girls, that end in they can be spelled different way, L-E-E-L-I-E, but names that end in the vowel E comprised about 25% of what I considered Utah names. So Rexley and all those Lee names are pretty common. Among boys, very common to have names that end with a vowel and an N, like Jason, Grayson, names like that. And also names that end in a vowel and an R, like Riker and Hunter. Those are pretty common in the state.
Interesting. So some sort of very kind of gendered suffixes, I guess, that pop up.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, the female names are definitely E-sounding names, and although there were female names ending in un, and those tended to be more male. And the ER, the AR, UR names tended to be female or male as well.
Yeah. I remember during the Brexit debates of the late 2010s that there was a funny joke going around, is there was someone somewhere in Utah is naming their baby Brexit right now.
That would not surprise me at all. See, things like that catch on. Yeah. I mean, you can almost tell when you get an unusual name, you kind of say, your parents were from that age because they named you after a song or a popular actress or something like that. Yeah.
So you noted the
Brexley exists. Brexley, anyway. Go
Brexley,
ahead.
Brexley, yes. Yeah. So you noticed Sun and and Ease. Tell us about Lynn's as another suffix for.
That's another one. It's almost a quasi suffix. Lynn spelled all sorts of different. L-I-N-L-Y-N. Very creative names. Another thing I found was the use of last names as given names. So Kensington, you know, a woman named Kensington. Another common thing for female names that really hardly exists outside of Utah is the Mac, Mick, Muck names, like Michaela, Mikkel, those sorts of names are pretty popular. As yeah. Not as common, but names beginning with Sha, like Shanae and Shailene and things like that.
And I tend to associate those more with African American names. So it's interesting to see that showing up in the Utah naming practices too.
Yes. Now I lived in Mississippi, and my wife was actually a high school teacher there, and she was not a native English speaker, and she brought home her list of names from her class, and she said, help me know how to pronounce these names because they're African Americans give very creative names to their kids. There was a master's thesis written by Mansfield, a woman named Mansfield, and she actually wondered, is there something about giving these names that is church-related? Now, obviously, if you're naming someone Benson or Helaman, obviously, but what about these creative names or invented names? And she interviewed a lot of Utahns and found that it really wasn't so much church-related as they wanted their kids to have distinct, unique names so that their children would be distinct and unique.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you attribute that desire to? You know, we see certainly in African-American context, people talk about unique, the phase of unique naming, because we went from, you know, Johns and Marks and so on in African-American names to much more unique names, sort of recalling African contexts. What about Utah naming practices participates in that kind of pseudo-ethnic identity or a distinctiveness or even that desire to have like unique children? I mean, everybody wants to have unique and great children. Why does it show up in naming?
You know, I'm wondering if it's just the Utah baby culture. You know, there's such a big thing about babies and families, and if that doesn't play into wanting something different for your kids.
You mentioned also, that one of the trends that you saw in Utah is naming children after objects or places. What are some examples of that?
Oh man, Alaska. I'm drawing a blank right now.
Rome.
What's that?
Seattle.
Rome, Seattle. There you go. You're bringing it up. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah,
I'm trying to remember the
names that I find. Yeah, things like river and forest and what else along those? Yeah, river and forest stuck out to me.
Stone.
Even though they're not
maybe.
Stone. Although, you know, they exist. You know, you got Stone Phillips of the news, but the fact that they're common here is interesting.
You also talked about abbreviated names being more common than the full name. So Matt's instead of Matthews. What do you think is behind that part of it?
Well, I'm wondering if that's just because parents say, look, we're going to call him Dan anyway, even though it's Daniel. So why not just put it on the birth certificate that way?
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, things like my poor mother, who was given a first name that no one ever called her by, just so that she was named after her aunt and everyone called her by her middle name. So it kind of goes the opposite direction. You know, let's give them a name we're going to use.
Yeah. So getting back to, you know, Utah and LDS is not necessarily the same. And I'm sure in different time periods between 1960 and 2020, the number of Latter-day Saints in the state is shift over time, right? So it's not a direct one-to-one. But there were some trends that were specifically LDS that, of course, pop up in your research. What are some of the distinctly LDS aspects of Utah names that started to
appear? Well, obviously, a lot of them were biblical names, Isaac or Book of Mormon names, Helaman. But then there are also some names such as naming people after famous, for example, the name Dallin really zoomed once Oaks became an apostle. That really jumped out. Names like Hillary, for example, took a nosedive when Hillary Clinton was not very popular.
Fascinating.
Yeah. But yet names like Porter and Dallin, Benson, names like that. But another thing that you find here that's kind of interesting is you find, say, either ethnic names such as Polynesian names. So you don't, aren't a lot of Siones outside of Utah, but inside of Utah, due to the high Polynesian population, you have a lot of Siones. And another one, even though the Scandinavian immigration has died, a lot of people have Scandinavian heritage. So there are names like Jens and Soren that are just not, or Mads, that just aren't very common outside of the state. And that's probably due to people looking at their genealogy and finding these Scandinavian names and thinking, yeah, that'd be a good name for my kid.
Yeah, yeah. To what extent do we see the, you know, along those lines, do we see the revival? And this isn't in the article, this is just my own personal question. The revival of kind of older names in Utah. I mean, there's obviously a push to kind of invented new names, but there was a kind of moment where we were getting a lot of Mabels again. And I remember growing up, my grandfather's name was Grant, and I didn't know anybody named Grant. And then by the time I was in my 20s, every new baby was being named Grant, you know?
Yes. Some of the old names like Emily and Elizabeth and things like that kind of sounded old-fashioned, they're starting to come back, yeah. I look at my own name, which when I was in growing up, there were 13 Davids everywhere, and that's kind of marked me as my age because it's David's just not a common name anymore.
I think Jennifer
fits. It's a name for old people. Yeah. Oh, Jennifer was definitely, what would that have been? And people born in the late 70s?
70s to 84 or something like that. It was the number one name.
Yeah.
And now it's
something like that. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. What's the number one name now? Yeah, you know, I think about my grandkids, and a lot of my grandkids have these names. Grayson and those are a lot of my grandkids have very common Utah names.
Are there any other trends that you see developing in this space going forward? If you had to say, you know, is the last 60 years going to repeat itself, do you see more of an assimilation with respect to names going forward?
No, I think what's going to happen is what's already happened in the past. The names that are common in the state are going to drop out of usage. New Utah names are going to pop up. They'll drop out and something else will take its place. It's just, it's like language change. It's going to happen and you can't stop it.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you put this research together. It was so fun to look at these trends. And I should mention for people who are listening that there are huge tables of names that you rank and show their popularity over time. And it's fun for people to go and look to find their own name on those lists. And so I would encourage people definitely to go take a look at that that article to find their own name and sort of see what the statistics were showing. As you said, it can kind of vary. Your name can date you in specific ways that we might not notice. Yeah. Yeah.
It does.
Well, David, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a huge pleasure having you on the show to talk more about your research. We hope that our listeners have enjoyed the conversation and have learned something new as well. If you'd like to learn more, check out David Eddington's Utah Naming Practices 1960 to 2020 in the spring 2024 issue of Dialogue and explore other resources on this and other topics there. To our listeners, thanks for joining us today. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues, and don't forget to leave us a review or get in touch with any comments or questions. We hope that you'll tune in to future episodes of our podcast. Please subscribe and rate the show, and be sure to check out the whole range of shows in the Dialogue Podcast Network. Thank you.
I'm going to take a risk in this ad by saying the word holiness right here in the very first sentence. That's risky because the word can trigger all kinds of positive or negative feelings. I mean, sometimes I'm afraid to call something holy because it makes things feel sort of unrelatable or like disconnected from everyday life. And really, I mean, that's too bad because the word's actually related to wholeness and healthfulness, which suggests that maybe we can learn to find holiness in places we never really thought to look before. I'm talking about holiness like a fire. It can warm, but it can also burn. You might get smoke in your eyes, but the flickering flames are also really beautiful. If this kind of holiness sounds appealing, you should check out Fireside with Blair Hodges. It's a podcast featuring writers, artists, and activists who can help expand your concept of holiness to include the gritty, earthy stuff of everyday life. Come fan the flames of your curiosity at Fireside with Blair Hodges, part of the Dialogue Podcast Network. Available at firesidepod.org and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dialogue Podcast Network.